You're listening to the Raising Empowered Humans series here on the Chat About Children podcast. Let's chat.
Discover children at a whole new level. Be empowered to grow with the children in your life. Welcome to Chat About Children with Sonia Bestelich.
Thank you for joining me for this very special series, the Raising Empowered Humans series. The intention of this series is to share powerful conversations with heart-led leaders, entrepreneurs, experts, innovators, and imaginators who share their stories, philosophies, practices, and principles when it comes to raising empowered humans. This series aims to inspire and energize parents, carers, and professionals who work with children to leave a legacy of raising children who are of highest service to themselves and to the world. Now, I do welcome you to sign up to my newsletter at soniabestelich.com for transformative tips, tools, and strategies to help you be more empowered in raising empowered humans. Let's get this episode started. Robin Sarana is a seasoned senior executive with a remarkable career spanning over 30 years across financial services, digital services, and not-for-profit sectors. Her professional journey is characterized by a profound commitment to care for her clients, her people, and the communities they serve. Throughout her career, Robin has excelled in executive and board roles, steering organizations through transformative phases, strategically developing initiatives and new markets from startups to multi-generational business. Her extensive experience spans various sectors and industries, and in her most recent positions as the National General Manager of Commonwealth Private Bank and Executive Director of Commonwealth Private. Robin harbors a deep passion for advancing financial empowerment and wellness for women and sustainability across generations. She has seen the firsthand impacts of lack of financial empowerment and is passionate about delivering impact and reforms. Robin, a massive welcome to the Chat About Children podcast, and particularly in this special series of Raising Empowered Humans. Welcome.
Thank you, Sonia.
Today's topic is a really important one, Robin, and it's all about money. It's about how do we help kids master its magnificence. And to be honest, the adults listening want to master it themselves, a lot of them, right? So it's multifaceted in that way. But I'd love for you to start, Robin, by you sharing your story, how you've come to be the empowered human that you are today, and what it was from your childhood that you feel has contributed to this.
Thanks, Sonia. I'm delighted to share. And I think that word of empowerment is an evolution. I think as we, you know, from childhood to adults to, you know, different stages of even adults, I think we're all evolving and learning around money, how we feel about money, how that empowers us more broadly in our lives. For me, like many, started in my own household and what I learned from my parents. My parents were migrants, and I always remember, my father saying it wasn't just about how smart you were, it was about how hard you worked, but also being wise with money, and not what you earned, but what you did with it was equally as important. And I watched that firsthand, certainly with my family, who in particular, my mother took a real interest and involvement in financial affairs. And my mum and dad had a small business that grew over time. And sitting at that dinner table and listening to them openly talking about money, and for us as children listening to that and that engagement and involvement, I think that evolved over the years. But that's sort of what I call dinner table education taught us some really strong fundamentals, and also how they thought about money, which obviously was shaping how we thought about money, and that some of those, I think, principles of observation have led through to my life as well, and now firsthand passing on to my children. And I think, you know, this assumption of financial empowerment is something that you're going to just learn miraculously or go off into a course and you're going to learn something. I think it really starts at home. And, you know, like many other habits that you see in life is, you know, your children are constantly observing and listening. So I think the role as a parent in being open and having those conversations, which, by the way, Sonia, humans don't like talking about money full stop.
Yeah, talking about money, especially even around the dinner table, it doesn't happen. We're super uncomfortable talking about money openly. And this is something that you're still observing.
Absolutely. We're very comfortable. You know, we talk around the dinner table about our health, well-being. It's great to see so many conversations happening now about mental well-being. But the financial kind of well-being or wellness is still a topic that we shy away from. And it's one that is such a critical conversation because, you know, your health, your family and your wealth are sort of the top three things that when people talk about themselves and what's important is the combination, but it's that third ingredient that we still feel apprehensive in having these conversations.
And so, I mean, we've obviously got a super long way to go when it comes to financial empowerment. And we know that our parents and carers play a very important role in that relationship that we develop. And the word itself, I've got to say, like for a lot of people, psychologically, physiologically, the word money triggers such a response in people, regardless of the amount of money that they have. And I find that really interesting. Do you have any thoughts on how we can start to collectively shift that response that we're having?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think for me, financial empowerment and how I think about it is a sort of two components. Financial empowerment is this sense of self-assurance and creates a sense of self-assurance, being confident about making wise choices, about designing a future, being ready for sort of unplanned events and having access to resources to kind of help reach the goals and designing a future where, you know, you feel comfortable and you're almost mitigating kind of risks to say I'm going to be okay, which is where this self-assurance comes from. The second component, I think, is financial wellness. And it's kind of a word that people are starting to talk about because it seems to fit really nice into kind of the, you know, the mental well-being and also physical wellness as well. We don't probably scroll our Instagram feeds or LinkedIn messages or whatever our socials we use when it comes to those topics is the same rate as we will for someone who's talking about their physical well-being. So there's this psychological piece to go, oh, yes, I know I need to know about this, but it's not as important. But it's actually linked to the other components because we know the impact of, you know, financial unwellness impacting on your health and certainly impacting on your mental well-being. So when I think about financial wellness, in my head, what I think about is it's this sort of active pursuit of education, literacy, and behavior, and the behavior and the accountability of around financial, I suppose, responsibility that we have and that accountability. And I think when we see things happening outside of us, we go, that happened, there was all these external variables. And with money, those external variables can hit us as well. But our behavior and our accountability when those things happen, that's the bit that I think really stretches us and we feel really uncomfortable with. And so for me, I go financial wellness is understanding how to manage, save, invest. You know, it's a bunch of things and how it links into your mental and physical well-being, you know, and that having that awareness is really, really important.
So can you think of a parent or a carer who kind of really turned their money story around? And what was the turning point? How did they break through? Because for a lot of families, when money is challenging, there's kind of this real stuckness, there's this cycle. What can you share with what you've come across?
Yeah, look, there's so many stories. And I think even over the, you know, Christmas break, lots of conversations having about the cost of living. I don't think there was many, you know, functions, engagements, you know, barbecues where that topic didn't come up for conversation, as I'm sure it did for many Australians who are listening to this. But you know what I found really intriguing is that no one actually shared what they were doing. So we talked a lot about you know, the impact it was having on us, how expensive things were, et cetera, the decisions that we'd made about, you know, not going on that holiday or et cetera, but very few of us talked about other actions that we've taken. And we weren't openly sharing that. So to me, you know, the simple things of going, well, yeah, I'm experiencing this cost of living and we're doing these little things. And I think even those simple things and what you can pick up and learn from other people, you know, there's so many stories, but I might share one with you. And the reason this one resonates with me is it's a situation that many people can find themselves in, particularly going through separation. And it was a couple that was going through separation. And in particular, my engagement was with the female, and they had three children. In her mid-40s, she'd raised the children, had spent, given up aspects of her career to do that, and they'd made a joint decision. But during this time of separation, which, you know, as you know, doesn't always, you know, it's a trying to get through it amicably is never easy. She found herself in a situation where she didn't anticipate. I'll just say that. And with three children and very little savings, you know, sort of minimal assets, and was very, very unsure even then about getting back into the workforce. And she had entered the workforce part-time, and that was going to change the dynamics of what they needed to do to support the children and the family. I think the crux of that example was that what she did do was, instead of going, now I need to go and, you know, buy another house, I need to do these things, she broke it up into really small steps. And some of those steps were starting to think about how is she not just going to sort of deal with the short term, but at the same time thinking about the long term, which is superannuation and having that security. And, you know, there's a lot of studies done on the psychology of money, and we'll talk about that hopefully through the podcast, but we do think differently than men and women. And that started in the 40s. You know, she's now sort of late 50s. And I think about the steps that she made at that time, not just thinking about what needed to be done immediately, but also how she was going to plan for small little increments that would help her to secure a financial future longer term. And, you know, and she started that sort of immediately. And I think that's been one of the profound things that I've seen. And I see many people in that situation, you know, male and female, that, you know, planning for the longer term plus the current, getting that juggling act correct and the importance of that. And I don't think that always happens when these situations arise, because it's all about the immediacy and sort of the primary needs. And it's important to ensure that, you know, you are thinking both the short and long term, even in, you know, very stressful situations like that.
Yeah. And it can be a massive overwhelm. So I love that, just break it down into small steps. And when you've got the small sizable chunks, it all seems like, yep, I can do that next thing. I can do that next thing. And she obviously reached out for support too, which is something that a lot of people find challenging. But again, it's all part of that empowerment process and the modeling that we're giving our children as well.
I think also for her is this scenario that played out for her was not expected. And she thought, well, she obviously was going to be in a different situation. But it created such a burning ambition that she said she never wanted to feel like she was in that place ever again, and that she needed to know that things needed to be different now. And some of those small steps of thinking about the future and not in combined with the current, she said she probably hadn't thought about that in the past because she thought somehow that was all going to be okay. But she really took that accountability for the long and the short.
I like that. And I think looking forward and keeping the focus forward is again, it can be really challenging for a lot of people when you feel pulled back a lot of the time. And
absolutely.
So just focus forward. Fantastic. And you've mentioned, Robin, you touched on a difference between, you know, men and women when it comes to financial empowerment. How do you describe the differences?
Look, I think we'll go to the facts and then the sort of psychology. There's two elements to that.
Yeah.
So women tend to live longer than men. They have shorter work at 10 years, lower earnings and levels of pension or survivor benefits. So these factors in itself are always going to put women at a higher risk than men of having financial problems. In Australia today, you know, we are still, we've got the gender pay gap, which is widening. We know that. It's about 13% in Australia. You know, that's not improving at the rate that we obviously would all like to. Sadly, though, today in Australia, 1.5 million women in Australia experience some type of economic abuse in relationships. And that was some research that was done recently by the ABS. Joseph Cuton, who's the head of research, and Good Shepherd, actually also a non-for-profit who supports this sector, have provided some really interesting insights. You know, and that's leading us to that there's an urgent and systemic reforms are required in Australia. And the problem is growing at a rapid rate. If we take some of those facts and then move into the psychology of how men and women think about money, and there is a lot of research out there. You know, in principle, how we view money, women are less aggressive than men. And even when we see investing, what we see is that they trade less and they are looking to earn higher returns from men. So that's that kind of long-term, short-term. You know, men often will view money as representing, obviously, their identity, et cetera. That comes from, obviously, historical, traditional roles. That is definitely changing. But women view it as security and autonomy. So it's, you know, about having that security and choices. When we look at male investment profiles, they're always interested in growing the principal, whereas women are really focused in investing about protecting. Women worry a lot about losing money more than doing nothing with it, and men don't like inaction. So you can just, yeah. I know certainly that plays out with me and my yep. husband as well. And men are intake to see outcomes and results, and women are really focused on, you know, higher priority, and the relationships are really important to them when they're dealing in money and as well. So they're just a few sort of factors which we know through lots of research done, common differences between the two. In terms of like kind of long-term versus short-term, women often look at shorter range goals. So that translates in finding bargains and eliminating debt. You'll see women, you know, often, you know, we go, oh, that's a great sale. Like that psychology of even when we're purchasing is different. Whereas men sort of view money in terms of a longer term strategy. So even in buying behaviors, we see that playing out, and it's no different on how we think about money as well.
That's huge. And as you're saying it all, and I'm kind of, it's in my mind, it's like there's column A, column B,
yeah.
them all. So how does all of that impact when we're raising children, regardless of what the family dynamic is? You can have carers and parents that do have different ways yeah. of handling money and differences in their psychology. You've mentioned your parents. If I can ask about your personal way of how you've raised your children in your dynamic, how have you raised them to have a healthy money relationship? How has that translated into their adult years?
Yeah. Oh, they'll probably be the best judge of that in a few years' time. But it's certainly something that we talk about. So in our household, we openly talk about money. We talk about debt when we're borrowing money, you know, certain things that we can't do or may not have been able to do at certain times that we've had to wait to do that. And the rationale of why we're doing that financially, and not being shy about, hey, things aren't always, you know, we're not picking it off the tree in the backyard. And I think particularly for my children's generation and those, you know, behind them now, is that even the sense of holding money, you know, everything's electronic, it's easy, it comes and goes, et cetera, this need for needs and wants. And we actually had a really good chat prior to this podcast about needs and wants. You know, for me, it's been very much about talking about it. Secondly, is also as they've been becoming young adults, is also showing them tools. Because I'm not sure about you, but my children have access to this wonderful thing called the internet and all this social media. But when it comes to really things that matter, they don't seem to want to spend as much time. So, you know, what is out there and the tools that they have access to, and showing them. I was actually with my daughter last night, who's 25, who's worked for a number of years while studying at university and going into a career now. And we looked at a superannuation balance, and I just showed her a few calculators and said, if you continue the way that you do, this is what you could be, you know, what your scenario may be at 67. How are you feeling about that now? And you know what she said to me? Oh, Mum, that's such a long way away. Why are we talking about this today? But that's exactly why we're talking about it today. Also, for the, you know, they're a lot savvy today. I mean, there's needs and wants is a really, you know, that I need it now, so therefore I should consume now. And I had a teacher at school who was wonderful, and probably one of the reasons I ended up into financial services and into this conversation 30 years on. And she had this principle, and she said 30, 30, 30, and I'll never forget it. 30% in savings, 30% in investments, and 30% in living. If I think about the practicalities of trying to achieve that today, you know, people would say you are absolutely mad, and it's so true, you know, trying to achieve that today. But if we even look at during COVID, and you'll see a lot of economic reports, and the CBA, we obviously have our own, and what it was showing us is that the peak of COVID, we were saving 23 cents out of every dollar. As the pandemic obviously started to dissipate, those levels of savings have dropped. Now in Australia, it's sitting between 5 to 7 cents per dollar. Is that what we are saving now? So we've sort of come out of COVID a couple of years on, and we're back into consumption. So how do you take, you know, obviously the 30-30 principle, you know, most people would say that's crazy in this current time of inflation and cost of living. But I think the principle of what I've said is, what percentage can you do? And are you committed and that accountability to try and put something aside for savings and someone for investments? And that's the conversation that we have and are having actually live on the, in our dinner table at the moment.
Wondering how your family can flourish without the sacrifice of your health, wealth, and dreams? Empowering a family to flourish is both an art and a science, and I'm super excited to have packaged decades of expertise to create the Flourishing Families program for you. It's time to shift the energy of your family ecosystem with more fun, more freedom, and more fulfillment. Head over to soniabeslich.com and sign up now.
So what were the dinner conversations when they were still in primary school, if you can remember them, Robin?
Yes. Oh, gosh. When they were in primary school, I think a lot of the conversations were about what are we planning to do, and how will we do that together? What were those exciting events going to be, and could we make those happen? And if we couldn't make them happen, why we couldn't make them happen this time? So it was being open about going, no, well, we're not in a position to be able to do that, or if you want $50 for this, you're not gonna, we can't do 50, but what is it that we can do, and or how can we get there together? Once they started part-time jobs as teenagers, both my girls did have part-time jobs, and it was when they first, you know, went into their roles. One was working for Coles for many years, 4 years. You know, it was quite interesting. It was like, well, how are you thinking about you now going to receive this money? You know, what part of this money are you intending on spending? And, you know, for her, it was, I want to spend all of it, which she did for the first sort of 6 months to a year. And then she was like, oh, but I don't have any savings. And then going back and having that conversation to go, well, you know, what, how much do you want to save? How much do you think you can save? Do you, you know, this needs and wants, it's a real challenge, and it always is. I mean, it's the psychology of human behavior. But I think even now with technology and the accessibility and the ability to actually transact so easily to arrive and fulfill their needs, you know, very, very quickly. Yes, so we have had a lot of packages at our household delivered to the door. But it's interesting, as they've got older now, I see that they're that's changing as well. So I think at different stages, when they started, you know, at an age where they were accumulating superannuation, it was that conversations around, well, what is superannuation? Because they didn't really understand it. It's just something that they had to do. So even simple explanations of what it is. Now as they're getting older, they're interested in savings and investments and what does investments actually mean, and there's more conversations that to have. So I think it changes even the amount of people I've seen in my career when they go, I've saved enough money, Robin, to buy a house, and they go off to the bank and they've got no idea what the poor bank person, the jargon that they're talking to them, like an LVR, and you know, and they're going, I didn't even know what that meant, but I assumed that what they were telling was right and they were guiding me through the process. So I think even, you know, buying your first home or your first in putting money into an investment, you know, there's a certain language set in any industry, and I think there's a huge responsibility for us to take accountability, learn some of those insights, but also for obviously the sector, which is doing a great job at teaching those with things such as, you know, KIT, for example. I know the Commonwealth Bank's app, which is designed for children, which is starting to introduce them to the concepts of saving and that kind of fun and gaming, to, you know, the budget planners that they have around the fundamentals of, you know, income and expenses and where is my money going. I mean, I've had those conversations over the years with my children. Where is this money going? And we've had those conversations openly as well to say, you know, where is the money going? Part of it is having the courage and the openness to have conversations, and can start in such simple ways.
I love that. And it can start really young. And I think that it's important that normalizing it as part of life, because it is a normal part of life, is really important, and not a topic, as we mentioned right at the start, that we shy away from or that we say it's not appropriate to talk about, because I still hear that a lot, where there's an awkwardness. So that talking openly, and also in your example, you mentioned giving your children that freedom to make those decisions and then to evaluate the decisions and understand them. And they're doing that in a supported way. You weren't kind of telling your girls like, this is a way to do it, this is the right way. And so it was more about taking a step back and being there to guide and support and ask them questions to lead them to think about things in different ways, but to have them forge those pathways. And that's where the empowerment comes, when they're experiencing it and then shifting and adapting, you know, what they want to do the next year or the next month or whatever it might be, which is really cool. One of the things, and why I kind of talked about to start the topic of this being, you know, helping kids to really look at the magnificence of money, because I'm one to want to bring those words together more and more, because there is so much of a historical association with money and power and evil and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, well, it you know, it really can be quite magnificent. And there's some really beautiful ways that we can creatively make money. So I wonder, have you got tips on how we can shift the lens from that consumerism focus and have children kind of see how they can creatively make money? Maybe their parents aren't the immediate role models for that. Who might be? I don't know. It's kind of the world is your oyster, but have a go and sharing some tips with us, Robin.
I think it is the magnificence of money, because it allows so many people to fulfill a purpose. Raising healthy families who are self-assured and, you know, and cared for, money enables that, right? It also enables, like, you see the generosity of Australia in communities and how we support communities every time, you know, you see it, you know, you see it in natural disasters and people going, yeah, absolutely, we're getting behind that. So I think that sort of magnificence of money is, even when you don't, you know, as someone said, it's not about how much you have, it's what you do with it. You know, we see that come out in community in times of need. You know, I've seen it myself personally, and people have been hugely successful in this, you know, really strong aspect of philanthropy in Australia, to be able to give back into different parts of society, whether that's in health or education, or whether I've seen that sort of generosity and that real desire to leave impactful and sustainable change. So, you know, and some of the things that we experience in the medical field, and there's so many areas in which philanthropy, and also now sustainability, where people are wanting to really invest for the future generations, and how can they contribute and give back. So I think the magnificence is everywhere. It's a little like a little red car. Until we get one, we don't sometimes see it.
Yep, absolutely right.
It's around us every day. And I think it is about celebrating those. I think it's about openly discussing those as well. And I think it's about, you know, it's like a consciousness of a contribution that we're all making in simple ways and raising, you know, self-assured, confident families, which leads into great health and well-being, linked to financial well-being, is a magnificent contribution in itself. But it's very stressful, and there's no doubt that different stages and different lives. You know, one of the things my parents I learned from was this: I always had this sense of, if you can earn money, then, you know, your decisions and how you make that, you need to be accountable for that equally as well. And it doesn't mean you're always going to get it right. And I observe them always having that huge sense of accountability and responsibility about the decisions they made. And we didn't always have everything that we wanted, like many of us, and we struggled at times. But I think that led back into that mental and physical well-being, where we were always quite cared for, and we knew it was going to be okay. And that was through this strong sense of accountability that my parents had around what life they were trying to create for themselves. And whether they achieved that in its fullest context, you know, they'll be the judge of that today.
I love that. And the accountability piece, I keep coming back to the word, you know, empowered, but that's what it is. That's exactly what it is, because practice that self-honesty.
Yeah.
Then you're really in a position that you can move forward, because you are not feeling that, you know, you're kind of at the receiving end of things that are just complete uncontrollables.
Yeah.
So that accountability piece is huge. So a question that I would love to ask, you know, money management I see is a life skill.
Yes.
And that's one thing. But then knowing how to and practicing how to be in a strong, healthy relationship with money, that's another thing. And they obviously come together. But this question I love, because I love imagining and reimagining. Mm-hmm. So if we were reimagining the school curriculum, Robin, and you could choose the top three modules within a financial empowerment component of the curriculum, what would you include and why?
First one is the psychology of money. So understanding my own awareness of how I feel about money today. So I think that's, you know, that starting at that kind of departure point of going, this is how I feel about money today. This is what makes me happy. This is what makes me anxious. You know, having that awareness of the psychology, because that's going to be different for me than it's going to be for the person next to me. That's going to come from experiences, my home environment, where I grew up, you know, et cetera, et cetera. All those things, you know, are part of how I feel about money today, because that then could help me to understand why I'm making those decisions and have that awareness to change that in the future. And I'm sure that changes. So I think for children, and understanding that, even how they feel about money and what they understand, also then helps with the learning that can be shaped. And like any learning, there's not one size that fits all, and you tick a box and go, oh, we did that curriculum. So that would be one. Second one for me would be what I call the basics of budgeting. You know, I'm still amazed, you know, when we've run a number of programs when I was at the CBA, and one of them was sort of basic budgeting. There's a number of tools, a lot of financial organizations offer those, but how few people actually go in and use that to go left and right, what's coming in, what's going out, like even that picture in itself. So I think those fundamentals, and then savings and investment. It was interesting. I asked my daughters the question actually before I came on this podcast and said, if you could have learned something more, what would you have learned? And they both said savings and investment was one of their kind of key call outs. And one in particular said to me, Mom, different asset classes, which really surprised me that she wanted to talk about different asset classes. But I think they would be the three key modules that are fundamental. I think the financial literacy and how it can continue through the different ages, through schooling, even at university. My daughter was saying to me, Mom, I wish I'd learned more about HECS debt. Yeah, and how I was going to manage that. It wasn't until year two that I realized it was compounding interest and all these things, and this bill was racking up. And in my head, I'm now starting to think about, as I'm entering the workforce, how am I going to pay this off? And she said, I wish I'd asked more questions about it and actually taken the time to learn more. So I think the financial kind of understanding and literacy, it's an evolution. You know, it doesn't stop, yeah, and there's different stages.
So if you had to refine, Robin, the three key principles to maintaining a flourishing relationship with money, what do you think they would be?
That's a great question. I would say be honest with yourself. Yeah. Look in, you know, be honest with yourself. I would say the second is seek guidance and be curious to learn about money, as you would do your health or other aspects of your life. And the third piece, principle, is start early around your financial wellness, promote it, talk about it. But also, I think there's always this perception that when I have X amount of money, I can do these things. You know, it can start for as little as $5 a week. You know, it's simple amounts that you can start thinking about. You know, where do you invest? What do you actually save? And that's not always achievable. I understand that. But if you can just start, it doesn't have to be big steps, small steps. And if you are curious and you can engage with people and ask people, and, you know, being honest with yourself is also having honest conversations with other people to say, I need some help or assistance or some guidance, and seeking that out, whether that be from, you know, technical specialists in the industry, whether that be from friends, family, others, that you identify to go, hey, and have that trust. Because I think part of psychological safety in talking about money is trust. And that's probably one of the reasons we don't openly talk about that. No different from health, and particularly the last 20 or 30 years about mental wellness as well. Having a trusting and enabling environment where the schools create that, where the organizations create that as an employer, the responsibilities that we have also to create that same enabled environment and psychological safety to talk about money. And I know there's a lot that, you know, a lot of the sector is doing, government is doing to create that, but it seems that, you know, certainly there's a lot more for us to do.
There's a lot packed into that response, Robin, so thank you. And I think, you know, a big part of that is I'd love for listeners to really appreciate that there are lots of channels of support and help out there, regardless of what financial situation you're in. And the second one, you know, you talk about psychological safety, absolutely. And I think, and trust, and I think the big one is there is so much, for some people, there can be so much shame tied up to things.
Yeah,
there can
absolutely
be so much fear around, you know, their own self-trust of, I'm just not confident. So there's so many layers to that. And what you mentioned before about asking questions and being curious, that's the big one. And I think that's the really big one, where if you can almost have, and I know it's hard because, you know, money is a very serious topic a lot of the time, but I'm very big on how can I play with this? How can I be playful? How can I be curious? And when we adopt that mindset, we really open ourselves to taking in the learning. So super powerful. So to finish up with, as we've discussed, money can be mastered for magnificence. It can be an area that we can really start to chip away at some of the bad rap that it's had for hundreds of years, thousands. But in the context of what does money magnificence mean to you in the context of raising empowered humans, if it evokes a picture for you in your mind, how would you describe that picture?
I visualize it, an image of kind of this happy, healthy humans with self-assurance.
That confidence, that self-trust and acceptance and that.
Yeah.
There's a real sense of, you know, peace that I get when you say that.
Yeah.
Keep it simple. Sometimes don't need the complexity, but keep it as simple as possible.
Absolutely. I sometimes think we love to overcomplicate things, and back 30, 40, 50, 100 years ago, that people were hugely, you know, successful, hardworking, all those things. the challenges. You know, this country's been through recessions, depressions. You know, I remember talking to someone recently who was telling me that, you know, about the depression and not having access to food, etc. So, you know, we have stormed these weathers in different, you know, these, we've passed these different stages in this country. And so, but it comes down to being open and honest and vulnerable and having the conversations, and the three link together. I don't hear many families talk about health, family, and wealth without not being attributed, you know, interlinked, and they are all interlinked. So, you know, a healthy community, a safe and secure community is also a financially empowered community.
Beautiful. I love those take-home messages. So, Robin, are there any resources that you'd recommend or any final comments you'd love to share before we close off?
I would say just, you know, start that curiosity research, you know, whether it's, you know, wherever you find that information, there's lots out there. Every morning when people scroll on their Insta feed, and I know lots of people do, even young, you know, certainly young people, you know, find someone you want to follow that actually is going to give you some education. You know, seek out professionals, seek out people that you trust and you feel like you're in a safe environment. Do a financial health check each year. Like many of us, I know in December I spend time and making sure I have my health check. I, you know, go and get a financial health check, you know, commit yourself. And we've just gone into FY24 and people write down goals, and on the top of their goals is often about love and friendships. It's often about their health. Put one down there about how you can improve your financial wealth as well.
Thank you, Robin. It's been an absolute joy and pleasure, and for sharing so much of your wisdom, because as I said right at the start of this episode, what you have shared and the work you've done over the years has really impacted and had flow-on effect for countless people. So thank you for being part of the series, sharing your wisdom, your tips, your tools, your visualizations, all of it. It's really, really awesome. So thank you, Robin.
Thank you, Sonia. It's been an absolute delight. And as I said, sometimes it's just the basic things that we can do together to make a better community for everyone.
Thanks for joining the Chat About Children with Sonia Vestelich. www.chataboutchildren.com.